I'm calling the first committee meeting, other than organizational, of the General Government Committee for the 73rd legislative session. Welcome all of you. We are today going to have invited testimony concerning our government partners. I thought we'd start out with a little sort of get everybody on the same page. I know that the committee members are sort of all over in the map in terms of their yep. breadth and depth of knowledge on local government issues. Some are quite knowledgeable on one or the other, and some are less so. So with that in mind, I have invited counties, cities, and special districts to come and briefly tell us how they interact with state government and the things that they feel it's really important that we know. Each of you will have to introduce each other from the various groups. In other words, the counties will introduce the county folks that are here as they testify before us. And with that introduction, unless there are questions from the committee that we can help you with, first off are the counties, and Commissioner Josie from Tillamook County is going to be our host for this section.
Thank you very much, and what I'd like to do at this time is introduce Nikki Witte from Coos County and Mike MacArthur. He used to be a county commissioner up until recently, and actually he was a county judge, and so he's going to talk a little bit more about the differences. He is now the executive director of Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you, Tim. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Mike MacArthur, Executive Director of Association of Counties. Unfortunately, our Vice President, Ben Boswell from Wallowa County, wasn't able to be here today. This is scheduled, advertised. Ben had a little trouble with the Columbia River Gorge, as you can understand, and other weather conditions. So it's understandable it was still 24 degrees at where I was from yesterday, so it's yet to thaw out. Just a little bit of overview about counties. Of course, there are 36 counties in the state of Oregon. We represent 100% of the population base of the state of Oregon. Our association includes 118 commissioners and judges. There are nine counties that have adopted charters, which means that they have taken steps that are beyond the general government status of other counties. And in those counties, there are different forms of organization. So you'll find that there are five counties which have five members on their board. So you see a difference in counties based on whether they've adopted charter or whether they are general law counties. There are also 11 counties which are eligible under statute to have county courts. Seven of them currently do. And in those counties, the chief elected official is the county judge, and that county judge has juvenile or probate jurisdiction. Three of the counties, the county judge has both. So those are the basic three types of counties. You'll see the charter counties, the general law counties, and the county courts. Our association represents all of those commissioners and judges, as well as other elected officials, the sheriffs, the treasurers, the assessors, the justices of the peace, the clerks, the engineers and surveyors, the administrators. We also are closely associated with the Association of Mental Health Professionals, the Coalition of Public Health Organizations, and Community Corrections and Tax Collectors. Our association meets regularly during the legislative session. We take positions on legislative initiatives. We also attempt to preserve the relationship that we have with the state. We are the service delivery arm of the state, as you'll see in the presentation that President Josie is about to give. So I will turn it over to President Josie now.
Thank you very much. The one thing I forgot to say is that I'm the chair of the state association, and he just alluded to that. Back in 1991, it was my freshman term as a legislator, and this committee, I believe, was intergovernmental affairs. And so I cut my teeth on this committee in the House. And we spent a lot of time developing the charter for Metro. And now I'm on LCDC and spent quite a bit of time, or 3 days in Portland, and we're going over the industrial lands in urban growth boundaries and updating that. And I really couldn't help but wonder, while I was working through that process, whether we made a mistake. You know, and I haven't come to that conclusion yet, but I kept asking myself, and I kept mulling that through my mind, and I really don't know. But what I do know is that our our land use system is certainly cumbersome, and I'm not sure that we made it any easier by creating that charter, and I'm not sure what the values are. And one of these days, and I know there are people that are grumbling about that, and I do digress a bit, but one of these days we're going to have that discussion about the value of Metro and whether we alter it or keep it or disband it. Be quite a bit, quite a job to disband it at this time. Well, let me, last night I found out that I had a PowerPoint presentation to give us, and so...
One interruption. Linda, could you put us at half lights for the PowerPoint? Not all the way down, because I... Okay.
You'll see County Department of State Services. I thought that was rather quaint. It's not actually my idea. Back in the time, actually, my first year as a county commissioner, Mike MacArthur was the chair of AOC, and he spent quite a bit of time here, and he talked about the County Department of State Services, and I thought that that was really good, and I've commented on that, and so I'm really glad that this part of the presentation, because we really are partners. When I was a legislator, I really didn't fully understand the partnership that we had as a legislator with the cities and counties. And so, you know, if I can leave you with nothing else today, I ask you to pay special attention to that partnership and some of the shared services and the history and history of the deals that were cut, such as video poker back at Senate Bill 1145. I was a part of 1145, and to this day I wish I hadn't voted for it, because you cut a deal with the legislature, or the counties do, and then times get tough and deals get altered. So anyway, Oregon counties are a partner in providing services that are important to the citizens and taxpayers of Portland, or of Oregon. I said Portland. What do you believe? Oregon counties deliver services that are funded from state revenue sources. In Tillamook County, about 52% of our general fund revenues come from the state and federal governments. And we, AOC represents 36 counties and 118 elected county judges, and you can imagine what that's like being the chair of AOC. It's like herding cats. I think that county commissioners are no better than legislators. We're all very opinionated, and we're all very diverse. And then, as Mike mentioned, we also have with us other elected officials, and the only time we have any control over them is when budget time is there, and so we control their budgets, but that's about all we control. AOC is an agent of local government. We are your unique partner, and I think that's also true of cities. Our special interest is in serving the people of Oregon, and I say us collectively. Overview. The diversity of Oregon's counties requires a flexible approach to statewide policymaking. One size does not fit all, as you know. Oregon is very diverse, and its counties are also very diverse. Counties provide many services through an important state-county partnership and many more at the local level. The state and counties are responsible for delivering critical services. Please keep that in mind as you go through your budgetary process this year, that when you make cuts that affect counties, it affects our collective constituents. Counties serve the same 3.5 million Oregonians as the state legislature. Counties cover the same 97,000 square miles. Counties maintain over 27,000 miles of roadway, and we employ 18,000 Oregonians. Counties manage $2.4 billion in combined revenue through citizen-driven budgets. Tillamook County's isn't anywhere near that. It's about $12 million. Counties collected over $6 billion in property taxes in the 2001-2003 biennium. Really, counties are the collection agency for the state, because the property taxes we collect for schools is used as an offset, and for of course for the county itself and for the other taxing districts, as ports, cities, this sort of thing. Counties administer the property tax system for all receiving entities, including cities and counties. I'd like to say at this point in time, when I was on the House Revenue Committee, there were different proposals to reduce property taxes for or property tax credit for this or for that. Remember, when you do that, that really affects our ability to maintain the services that we provide. And cities and counties are we're in a different situation than the state. The state, of course, is a product of ballot measure 5, and you live and die with the income tax. And I was here when ballot measure 5 passed and recognized then that the state was going to be in big trouble, but it was a decade later before it happened. Who knew we'd have a decade of such growth? Ballot measure 5 didn't affect cities and counties too much, but ballot measure it did, but the combined slam or 1-2 punch of measure 47 and 5 really did. And cities and counties and actually all local taxing jurisdictions are going to be in for a tough row, and some of them have really hit the wall already because it froze the rate and it only allows the growth by 3% a year, additional growth or buildings, that sort of thing, help. but we could actually receive less revenue if the economy goes down and the net present value of homes decline. And so the forecasting that I show for Tillamook County shows that we're going to hit the wall in about 2 years, and we're going to have to start dipping into our revenues, and then we're going to have to start laying some folks off. And so I know other counties have hit the wall already, Clatsop County, Klamath County, and there are others. And when I talk to our auditors, they say that we're not alone, that this is true all across the state of Oregon, that we're all going to be in trouble because of Measure 47 and Measure 5 combined. different counties impose transient lodging taxes, business income taxes, car rental taxes, and local gas taxes. Tillamook County doesn't do any of that, and I can tell you they have my head if I tried. So that's really not an option. Now, consider these six counties. This is something that you all know instinctively. Multnomah County, Lincoln County, Lane County, Wheeler, Harney, and Jackson County. They're all very diverse. Populations, look at Multnomah County, 670,000, and then all the way down to Wheeler County, 1,550. So a big disparity between the counties in terms of population. The least populated counties equals the 23 least populated counties equals Multnomah County. So when Multnomah County comes to an AOC board meeting, we pay attention to them. Square miles, you can see that Multnomah County has the least amount of square miles, and then Harney has the most amount of square miles at 10,228. 1,425 people per square mile in Multnomah County and less than one person per square mile in Harney County. The roads, there's a big difference in the roads. Multnomah County at 335, Lane it tops it at 1,429. I would not have guessed that. and then the orange is unpaved, and then the red is total. 27,000 total county road miles, four times more than ODOT. And I want to digress a bit here. The last time we passed an increase in the gas tax was when I was here and back in 1991, and it's gone down since. And for Tillamook County, roughly 50% of the revenues that we that fund our road department come from the State Highway Trust Fund, which is gas tax, vehicle registration fees, that sort of thing. And then I would say 40-40 and then or 45-45 and then 10% we get from grants from the federal government. So we get roughly half from the state and then half from the federal government through the safety net legislation. This is legislation that is really in lieu of timber revenue that we used to receive from our federal forest lands, and that money for our U.S. Forest Service goes directly to the road department, and that's the lion's share for Tillamook County. And the safety net legislation saved our bacon, but it didn't start us back where we were. And so we actually had a dip in revenue, and we're starting back up again, but we're about $1 million short every year. Our roads are really hurting. We won't catch up unless we get some additional help from the State Highway Trust Fund, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. So the next time ODOT comes before you and says, we need more money, you ought to ask them, what have you done for counties lately? Because roughly speaking, the revenue is split. 50% goes to ODOT, and then 20% to counties, or 30% counties,
20%? 60, 24, 16 right now.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Excuse me. Go back and explain that stat.
Chair Berger, the formula split right now is 60% to ODOT, 24% to counties, and 16% for cities. There was a,
and this is from the highway fund?
Right, the okay. Gas tax. The agreement for future revenues would be between the parties, recognizing the need the counties and cities had that we've talked about in the future, going to a 50-30-20 split.
Okay.
For future revenues. Now we get to the shared services between the state and the counties, and then the state services in the green. It's the same green. And then red is the shared services, and county services are the blue. And we all serve the same Oregonians. And you can see, and I won't go into this in any detail, but the green is state-provided services. This is all services for our constituents at the local level. The red are the shared services. And then the blue are services that the county provides by itself. So this is health and community services, public safety, economic development, natural resources and recreation, transportation and land use planning, and other community services.
For the panel, excuse me, that's not readable in your at your desk, but they have provided a color copy of that slide. I think it's an important piece that this committee needs to be aware of. It's a good graphic of sort of the interrelationship of these services.
Thank you, Chair Berger. So in conclusion, the diversity of Oregon counties requires a flexible approach to statewide policymaking. One size does not fit all, as you know. Counties provide many critical services through an important state-county partnership and many more with local resources. And Oregonians expect and need these services, and they hold us, both the state and the counties, accountable for these services. And with that, thank you very much. And if Nikki has something.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Nikki Whitty from Coos County, and I wanted to call your attention to a sheet in your packet that lists our principles for a shared systems services. And I'd just like to add one thing to what Mike and Tim have said, and that is in the area of one of the programs that counties and the state agreed on many years ago, and that's community corrections, or you might know it as parole and probation. And in those counties where the state has taken it back over because of a shortfall in revenue, counties have given it back, I think you'll find that it's much more expensive for state-run program than it is at the county. And I'm just afraid with what we're looking at now, another $18 million cut, that maybe you'll be getting way more back. And so it's just something to keep in mind.
Commissioner, how many have we gotten back?
I believe, I know Douglas County for sure. I believe Lynn. I think Curry has given notice, but I don't know if they've actually gone through with it yet.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, that concludes our remarks. We'll be happy to answer any questions the committee might have about county government.
Thank you very much. I, by way of explanation to the committee, I asked the combined group here, we've got three presenters, to be very, very brief. And in that spirit, you can see they went fast and went briefly through this. I certainly would entertain questions of this panel with regard to counties, but my And I'm sure any of these folks would come to your office and give you a thorough vetting on any of the issues that have been brought up or any others that you'd like to know about. Do I see nods back there? Yes, I do. But I certainly would entertain questions at this time of this panel, but this is the beginning of the discussion, certainly not the end.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I'd just like to ask the panel, first, thank you for the presentation. Very informative, very detailed. Appreciate it. If you were to prioritize, if you were to say the one greatest need Oregon counties face in this biennium, how would you respond to that?
Oh, I'm not prepared to.
I'm up on the third floor.
Commissioner Josie is looking at that 118 elected officials that he's the cats he's trying to herd and wondering, oh my goodness, no matter what I say, who's going to be mad at me? I can guarantee you. But I think it's an appropriate question, because I think as this session progresses, we will all feel the squeeze, and we are going to need to know what's most critical and what we can let go of. And I think you understand this dynamic very well, so I think the question is appropriate. Commissioner?
Let me give a qualified answer. I've had a chance to think about this. This only applies to Tillamook County.
Okay.
Our roads are in dire straits. They're really a mess, and they're not getting any better.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think, and of course, I'm not a commissioner, and I don't speak for the commissioners, but I think in Jackson County, the biggest hurt we have is loss of O&C revenue. That's going to hurt us immensely. It's going to hurt every county in this state, but Jackson County relied pretty heavily upon that. So, and so does Tillman. So,
thank you. Questions? Further questions? Thank you to the panel very much.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank you, your very able administrator, Kara Fisher, for setting this up.
There might have been a little something to that. So we will invite the cities to come up and talk to us about their connection to state government. And again, I will let them introduce themselves as they speak.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Strobeck. I'm the Executive Director of the League of Oregon Cities and a former member of this committee, along with Representative Josie, and also a former chair of the Revenue Committee. So I served with Representative Josie in the 90s in the legislature. With me today is Mayor Helen Berg, Mayor of Corvallis, who's President of the League of Oregon Cities this year, and also David Barenberg, the Legislative Director for the League, who you will see frequently during the course of the next, should I say, 5.5 months or so, optimistically.
No more than six, surely.
Surely. We appreciate the opportunity to speak to this group and also to really share the message that the county's brought to you, that we are partners in government with the state, and that we do things together, but we also do some things differently. And Mayor Berg will talk about some specific issues that are happening in her community right now that really point out the difference. I'm going to take sort of the high-level view, and you have lots of detailed information in your packet. First of all, cities actually predate the state of Oregon. Oregon City was incorporated as a city in 1844, 15 years before Oregon ever became a state. And by the time Oregon did become a state in 1859, there were actually four incorporated cities: Astoria, Portland, Oregon City, and Corvallis was a state prior to the state becoming a state. Now, Clackamas County holds the unique distinction now of being the host to the oldest city in the state, Oregon City, and also the newest city in the state, Damascus, which was just incorporated in a vote of the people last November, and are just getting started in their experience as self-government. So this fact, along with the fact that cities in Oregon, 240 cities, have very different needs, very different sizes, three-quarters of them under 5,000 population. But the drafters of the Constitution recognized the uniqueness of cities and the special place that they have in managing their affairs locally. And so they actually put in the Constitution the provision that the counties talked about in home rule. So as Representative Esquivel and Sumner know firsthand, having served on city councils, that cities do very much cherish that home rule provision, which in brief states that they have the authority within their city limits to pretty much enact whatever policies they want, unless preempted by the state legislature. And whenever any issue comes up that involves preemption, I always would like you to consider, is there really an overriding statewide interest in forcing something on cities, or is this just an issue that should be solved locally? And a lot of times certain interest groups think it's easier to come to the legislature and say, make them do this or make them stop doing that. It's easier to convince one body here than 240 bodies elsewhere, but you're also affecting 240 elected governing bodies all over the state when you take those kinds of actions. And I think it's one that should be extremely carefully considered and, in my opinion, rejected whenever they come before you. The other issue that, of course, we're all grappling with has to do with finances. And with the legislature considering a spending cap this session, I would like to echo the comments of our county partners that we are under a spending cap at the local government level at cities. We have had the first Measure 5, which limited the rate for property tax assessments. But more important has been the impact of Measure 47 and 50 in the fact that 3% is the growth limitation on property taxes every year. If, this is a big qualifier, if your property actually grows at that rate, that 3% is the cap, and it can certainly be less than that. And with the costs of personnel, raw materials, and other items all going up far more than 3%, we've had cities that have had to make some very difficult decisions. City of Roseburg has laid off 10% of its workforce. Can't afford it anymore because they're getting 3% more revenue and costs are 15 to 16% more per year. Something's got to give. We don't have any other tools locally. We do rely on things such as fees, such as franchise fees with telecommunications, electric, gas, and so forth. That is generally the second largest source of revenue for cities, and we also use a lot of user fees, just like the state does. We apply for many grants to do specific projects, and state shared revenue, although very tiny in terms of the total state budget, is extraordinarily important when it comes to local government budgets. Almost all of that money goes into general funds, and general funds principally serve police and fire needs locally. So if anybody comes and says, let's cut shared revenue to local governments, don't think of it as an enhancement to the state government. Think of it as a cut in police forces in 240 cities across the entire state. So I'd urge you again to consider that. One thing that I think is a common misconception is local tax rates. Now, local property tax rates are not the same from community to community. They were adopted by the citizens as a tax base, and again, those can know the tax proceeds cannot go up more than 3% a year, but it's not true that they are the same everywhere, and I know that there are some people who are under the impression that all cities have the same tax rate. They certainly don't. Some have, you know, just over a dollar per thousand, some other up to $3 or $4, and there are a number of cities, I think it's 13, that have zero property taxes. They never established a property tax base, and unfortunately one of the quirks of Measure 47 and 50 closed the door on that forever. Unless there's a constitutional amendment, they can never establish a tax base. That is, unless they disincorporate and then reincorporate as a new city, they could establish one. But I don't think they will do that. Cities do operate some services such as water and sewer on an enterprise fund basis, meaning that they operate like a business. The money charged for those services goes right back into those proceeds and is used for maintenance and operations. And cities also respond to the needs of their citizens in terms of what kind of services they may want that are different than the other cities. For example, there are several cities that operate their own electric utilities, municipal electrics. There are some that operate fiber optic networks and operate their own cable and telecom services is down in Ashland. And right now, Monmouth and Independence are putting in a fiber optic network that was passed by the voters and very, very much supported. Also in 1996, voters approved a legislatively referred ballot measure known as Measure 30. It's kind of been somewhat forgotten, but I think it's one that you need to be aware of that prohibits unfunded mandates on local government, which is defined as a new program or an expansion of an existing program that have a budget impact of more than 0.01%. That is, unless the legislature makes a 3/5 vote, just like a tax increase. And that same measure also, which is in the Constitution, Article 11, says that there couldn't be any reduction in state shared revenue beneath the level in place at the time that measure was passed without a 3/5 vote of the legislature. So, again, that was an effort at that time to recognize that it's totally unfair for the state to feel proud that they balanced their budget if they have done that by simply shifting the burden down to state, I mean, down to county and city governments. That's not a solution. You need to look at the picture in a holistic manner. Also, our form of government is different across the state, although the vast majority of our cities have what's called a council-manager form of government, in which the unpaid volunteer mayor and city councilors are elected to set overall policy, and then they hire administrators, city administrators or city managers, who then operate the city on a day-to-day basis, become essentially the CEO of the city, with the city council and mayor acting as a board of directors. And I know that your salaries are not going to be putting you in the top 10% of wage earners as legislators, but they're a king's ransom compared to what city councilors and mayors receive, which is zero in most cases. We do have two cities, though, that have a different form of government. I'm sure you're aware of that. The city of Portland has a commission form in which the commissioners take bureau responsibilities and actually become administrators themselves. And then one other unusual form of government is the city of Beaverton, which by charter has a strong mayor form of government, in which the mayor is elected to not only be the political figurehead of the city, but also the operational figurehead or operational head of the city. And so they don't have a city manager in Beaverton. They have a strong mayor form. But all others either operate with a council manager or some of the ones that are very small. They only have a couple of employees. The city clerk, the city recorder handles the day-to-day business, and the mayor and the council act as advisors. I want to echo another comment before I turn it over to Mayor Berg, that cities and counties are not a special interest. We don't play the political game. We don't make contributions. We don't do those kinds of things. We are in the same business that you're in at the state level, which is delivering services that make the quality of life better for the people of Oregon. And with that, I will ask Mayor Berg to make her presentation.
Thank you, Chair Berger, and members of the committee. Thank you very much for having us here today. My name is Helen Berg. I'm mayor of the city of Corvallis, and I am the 2005 president of the League of Oregon Cities, and we're very proud to be here today on behalf of the 240 cities of Oregon, in which live most Oregonians. The great majority of Oregonians live in cities, also in counties, and of course in the state of Oregon. So we are serving the same people, as Ken said. But you are all familiar with your constituents, and you know that there is a broad spectrum of people in Oregon and a broad spectrum of communities, and each of our cities is unique. We each have our own characteristics. We each have our own very special quality of life. But in each of these 240 cities, there's a mayor, an elected city council, and a budget commission. And we are all committed to providing services to the people in our cities. And they are services that no one else provides. It's our responsibility, and we are the ones to do it. And those basic services are police and fire protection, parks and recreation and libraries, public works, and development. When I speak of our differences, though, they are as nothing to our commonalities. We have these services to provide, and we cherish our autonomy. We are the elected officials, and by the way, we're not here asking for a king's ransom. We are the elected officials that are absolutely closest to the people of Oregon. We're so close that we get phone calls in the middle of dinner and we discuss public policy in the produce department of the grocery store. So what we cherish most is the ability to identify what is needed in our community and what problems we have. And I know it's old-fashioned. You're not supposed to have problems anymore, only challenges. But in any case, we identify those and we figure out what to do about them locally, close to the people that we're providing the services for. And so more than anything, what we need in our partnership with the counties and with the state is your recognition of what our strengths are, what we can do, and how you might help us do that. Now, I was asked to give a few examples from my own city. I mentioned police and fire protection as being very fundamental. In Corvallis, prior to the passage of Measure 4750, we had the money in the bank to build the fifth fire station. We wanted the fifth fire station. It was a part of the city that had developed a good deal. We try very hard to keep our response times within 4 minutes. We had the money in the bank, which is a huge savings. Of course, you don't have to borrow it. You don't have to pay interest. We couldn't build it because of Measure 4750. We wouldn't have had the operating funds to hire the 9 full-time people that it takes to operate a fire station. And by the way, our people are all totally cross-trained. What we did was we had a public process. We won a league governance award for this, but we had a large public process in which, as never before, we engaged the citizens of the committee in the budget process. And one of the outcomes of that was to use some other property funds to fund the operating expenses of that fire station. This was a value judgment made by the people of Corvallis, essentially, that fire protection is one of the most fundamental services. But what it has cost is our library isn't open as many hours. People really miss that. We're accustomed to being ranked nationally in our library, and we can't do that with the budget we've got now. Just try cutting some programs at a public swimming pool. You immediately begin to hear about that. So it is this weighing back and forth of the various kinds of community values that need to be met. But we do need to provide these services. You certainly don't want to have to provide them, and the county doesn't want to have to provide them. So part of our partnership is all being able to take care of that which only we can do. We are very much blessed economically in Corvallis because our largest employer is the university, and I'm a retired faculty person, so I know that the university never has enough money. But on the other hand, they are an extremely stable employer, extremely stable. But then we also have in our community Hewlett-Packard, which can bring great prosperity to our community during the up cycles of their industry, and which we feel in every single store and service and household in the community when they're on a down cycle. But one of the things that happened after the passage of Measure 4750, combined with the depreciation of property like that at Hewlett-Packard, was that we didn't achieve at anything like the 3% that this measure intended communities to have, but we actually had a drop in revenues. And I mentioned the property tax consequences of that. So we do work with the county and the school district and other cities in Benton County on such matters as public transit. We are now a metropolitan planning organization. So we cherish our partnerships. We know how dependent we are on everybody else. What we share with everybody is our enormous pride in the state of Oregon. But we do very much ask you to help us stay good at what we do and able to do what we do well. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm David Barenberg, as my boss, Ken Strobeck, had said. I was given the role of batting cleanup, which is probably not the right term to use when one's president and executive director are sitting to one's left. One quick story. The league embarked on working with all of our cities just to try to have a day in October where we had invited legislators and candidates to our cities, and did that in 25 senatorial districts and tried to cover that with our staff. So we were running around the state pretty wildly that day. And I started off that morning in Pendleton, and the Pendleton meeting had the legislators sitting up at the DS and a group of 20 cities sitting in the audience, and people had their roles, and that was the kind of meeting that they had and were used to having in that setting. Then I drove across the state to get to the meeting or the city hall day that was in Lake Oswego, and I walked in and it was a cocktail party, minus the cocktails. It was mingling and discussion, and everybody was moving around, and there was colored bunting and cookies like Uncle Sam, and a lot of discussion going on with legislative candidates and legislators there. And then finally I ended my day in Oregon City, where there was a fireside chat going on in their old Carnegie Library, restored Carnegie Library, by the fireplace, where the majority leader was sitting in a semicircle with city officials and chatting by the fire. And it really just reinforced to me that cities all have a unique character, and that what we're asking at the legislature is to be able to maintain those individual characteristics that cities and the citizens in them cherish and develop, and the personalities that they have. I think, as Mayor Berg said, that cities are confronted with a number of different issues and choices, and among them are the really using the tools that were provided under Home Rule to make decisions on how a city will look, primarily how we will fund services and the tools that we have to fund them. So one of the things that we ask the legislature is really to take the Hippocratic Oath, as it refers to local government, is please do no harm. Please don't take any of those tools away in terms of preemptions that you'll be faced with. And we ask, as you consider those issues, that the decision isn't whether you like the decision a city is making, but whether you believe that the local citizen should have the ability to make those choices themselves, and realizing that what's good for one city may not be a choice another city would make. And we value the partnership that we have with state government on a broad array of topics. Economic development clearly is one where the city, state, and county, as well as Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Transportation, Economic Development, the Housing Department are all sitting at the table together trying to work as partners on strategies on economic development, down to what works in different regions or what things do we need to change to be more competitive. We're working very closely together, meet regularly, and I think work very well as a team in that area. Land use, this year we'll be facing a lot of challenges with Measure 37, something that we are working together with the state agencies on. No one has the answer, but it's something that affects all levels of government, and we're working very cooperatively on those issues. Law enforcement, the focus on meth in the community, is something where local law enforcement, county law enforcement, the state, all have a role, and we need to work very cooperatively together. But coming back to just, what do cities want out of the session is really just to maintain the tools that we have, to work with the state to solve some problems that we have, particularly on economic development, also on providing water rights and ensuring that we have the ability to develop and provide for our communities, and also to maintain the small pieces of shared revenue which are critical to cities, and we've been receiving from alcohol and tobacco funds going back to prohibition and passage of a ballot measure in 67. Those things in terms of partnership and providing the services at the local level really are what we look to working with you on during the session, and we're happy to answer any questions, provide any information, and work with our state partners.
Thank you to this panel. Questions about cities? We have a couple of city folks here. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have just a comment, if I may, to my colleagues. When we're working through the year to learn to be efficient, to put our money where it needs to be put, to provide the services that the people of the state really need, I think that we all, and I'm sure we all have, but let's return and look at the way our cities are doing business. They provide fundamental needs of the citizens of their cities. Water, sewage, parks, libraries, the things that people really need. All politics, as they say, are local. When we get to the point where we can work with the cities to enhance their financial ability to govern, we'll be helping everyone in the state, at the county level, at the state level. Everyone will profit from that. I just encourage you all, look to the cities if you want to see efficiency in government. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sumner, of course, who's the former mayor of Moala. And aren't you glad he's here? And we are, too. Question.
Thank you for the presentation. I just, you hear a lot of talk about how government in general, cities, counties, they need to be more like the private sector. But could you articulate some, what you see are essential distinctions between what you can do in terms of your structure and efficiency as cities versus what, Hewlett-Packard could do?
Well,
Anyone?
Yeah, it's to...
We are not profit-making organizations. That's the basic, most basic difference. Every single dollar we bring in needs to be spent on our citizens in a transparent way that we can demonstrate year in and year out in a budget process, which is totally open not only to our own cities, but to state and federal inspection. So... our task is the provision of services that most accurately meet the needs of our citizens. Now, of course, we need the support and cooperation of the private sector in doing that, because nothing we do generates revenues. That's done in the private sector, which for the common good are shared with government. But nobody else does what we do, and everybody depends on what we do. And if I might be very basic here for a moment, when I talk to school children, I say to them, if you're anything like the rest of us, when you get up in the morning, you do one of two things. You either get a drink of water or you go to the bathroom. And it's city government that makes sure that that water is good for you and tastes good and it comes at the right pressure in your shower. And the sewers have to work 24/7.
Sort of basic.
Madam Chair, Representative Galizio, I think I would just say also that the difference is that we don't choose the business that we can get in and then say, well, this isn't working out, we're going to get out of that and go in to do something else. As the mayor said, the sewers, the water, the police, all those things have to operate regardless of what the revenue picture is, regardless of the demand. So you can't really say it's a supply and demand issue. it's a requirement to deliver that regardless. And when people say run government like a business, I understand. I think the general principle, which is squeeze every penny and make sure you're being efficient and deliver great value to your citizens, your shareholders. And I think we absolutely do that. But I think there are a lot of ways in which we can't operate like a business, and the citizens actually benefit because of that.
Thank you. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, I think Representative Galizio I think what you're getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that we can pattern some certain things within a municipality after a business. Example, in the city of Medford, we embarked upon a biennium budget where we had goals and benchmarks for outcomes of the budgetary process. That is patterned after the private sector. We provide services in cities, like the mayor of Corvallis said, that no one else does. I mean, if you want a park, who provides a park? If you want the streets to be in good shape, who do you call? You want, like she said, when the storm drains back up, who do you call? It's our job in the municipalities to do so. But there's other things as well. Financially, I think we can pattern some of our governmental agencies on a private sector path and contingency funds. The city of Medford, I believe, we have a 20% contingency fund in the general fund. We don't touch that. We always go worst case scenario down there, and I believe that this glitch that we've had in our particular downturn in our market, the city of Medford hasn't missed a lick because of those things that were put in place long before any of us were ever elected to that council. They've been in place for many, many years, and it was pretty good wisdom on the part of people in the 50s. So there are some ways that we can pattern after the private sector, but on the other hand, there's things that we do that we have to do because that's our job. We're providing services that other people don't.
Thank you. Any other questions of this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in. And Madam Mayor,
pleasant
nice to hear from you.
You're the one who's doing it.
All right, our final panel is something called special districts. These are sort of the interesting other governmental group that I think we need to hear from, and a good reminder of their existence and how they fit with these other sort of more well-known entities. And with us today, Hasina Squires, and you'll introduce your...
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires. You'll see on your agenda listed as Western Advocates Incorporated. Unlike the League of Oregon Cities, the School Boards Association, and the Association of Oregon County Special Districts Association contract out their lobbying services to the firm that I work for, which is Western Advocates Incorporated. With me today is Greg Baker, the Executive Director of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our president happens to be from a vector control district in Umatilla County, and he also is the mayor of Hermiston and contracts with the county sheriff's department. So he really is a full meal deal local government guy who just did not want to brave the pass to the gorge today. So I'd like to just point out, too, that even though I'm not an employee of Greg's, the reason that I'm not sitting in the middle is that mic might be bad, so you might want to have that checked out later. So I just would like to start out our presentation by saying we do what cities do. We provide the same services that cities provide in incorporated cities, within incorporated cities, and also within unincorporated areas. So our interests are very much aligned with the League of Oregon Cities. You'll typically see the three of us at some point, cities, counties, and special districts, come before you, echoing Ken Strobeck's comments regarding preemption of local property taxing authority. One of the biggest differences, though, between special service districts and cities is we are truly single service providers. There are approximately 900 special service districts that provide about 30 different functions throughout the state of Oregon. When I started working for the association 10 years ago, I used to testify that there are 800 special districts, and that number has been climbing and climbing and climbing. And so this is the first session that I get to say 900. I refuse to change to anything, like I wasn't going to go with 825, 860. But now this is the session that I get to say 900 special districts throughout the state of Oregon. We, as I've indicated, we are single service providers who serve both cities and unincorporated areas. In fact, in some cities, we're providing the water, the sewer, the parks and recreation, the library, and they're providing the land use function. So in some instances, we are the provider of all of the services, nearly all of the services. Another big distinction between us and the cities are we don't receive state funds. We don't receive state shared revenue via cigarette or liquor tax. We don't charge franchise fees. The only budgetary function that affects our district is really truly in the 911 tax excise distribution, which is given to cities and then user boards through 911 service district user boards is given to us. So we're proud to not be dependent on the state budget for many reasons, and this is particularly going to be one of those sessions. Also, with respect, so our main issue, our main focus when it comes to revenue issues really truly is property tax preemption. It hurts us, we would argue, at some point a little more than cities. We don't have the opportunity to, if you enact a property tax preemption, we don't have the ability to shift that cut that we're going to take to the library department or to the Parks and Recreation Department. We just simply have to take the cut and operate with less revenue. That being said, not all of our districts operate. Over half of our districts don't have permanent tax rate authority. They solely exist on fees and user charges, and that mainly consists of our water and sewer types of districts. As I indicated, there are about 30 districts or 30 types of special districts throughout the state of Oregon, and we are truly a creature of Oregon Revised Statute. We do not have home rule charter authority, so the only powers we have are what you give us in statute. Our overarching statute is ORS 198, but a number of other types of special districts have an enabling statute that gives them additional or different types of authority. I'm on slide 5 now. The types of districts that belong to special districts, there are 30. Our big districts, the biggest number of our districts really is in slides 6 through 9. Our rural fire protection districts, there are approximately 240 of those that belong to our association and about 300 statewide. City fire departments are really becoming a thing of the past and have been declining in the last decade. There are only about 20 or 30 city fire departments left in the state of Oregon. So really our association is representative of the fire service, so to speak. Throughout the state of Oregon, our other biggest membership holder is the water irrigation, water control, water improvement, water supply. We have approximately 222 of those providing service throughout the state of Oregon. And then we break down into about 20 or 50, between the range of 20 or 50 different types of districts, sanitary districts, which are providing sewer and stormwater services, parks and recreation districts, library districts, road districts, which we're seeing an increase in those due to counties not being able to maintain roads, particularly in the more rural areas, and then port districts. On slide 10, I've just given a breakdown to you of different types of districts and where they may be heavily reliant on property taxes or on fees and charges, and I think I covered that fairly well. On slide 14, we provided a breakdown for you of where all of the special districts, how many special districts are in each county in Oregon. And as you can see, it really varies. For instance, Clackamas County is a very good example of a large number of special districts providing services to a large unincorporated area that's metropolitan in nature, but sometimes rural, and then also providing service to cities. We have particularly a large number of, in fact, I believe in Clackamas County, I can't think of, other than the city of Gladstone, one municipal fire department that exists in Clackamas County. Most of the county is served by Mallala Fire District, Clackamas Fire District, Boring, all of those areas in Clackamas County. One other creature of special districts, too, is also a county service district, which is actually... There's in Clackamas County, for instance, there's North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District. It is governed by the Board of County Commissioners, but is an ORS 451 special district. So they belong to our association, but actually is governed by the Board of Directors of the county, and we have a number of those throughout the state. On slide 16, wanted to give you a little flavor for the big and the small. Our biggest special district in the biggest special district in the state of Oregon is Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue District, which provides service to, I'm so glad they're not in the room, I believe 10 cities in Washington County. The majority of our districts are small in nature. 72% of our districts have five or fewer full-time employees. They heavily rely on volunteers. Of the 240 rural fire protection districts in the state, there are approximately 8,000 volunteer firefighters that are providing service to those fire districts, uncompensated service. 34% of our districts don't have any full-time employees, and it's all done on a volunteer basis. Turning to the next slide, again, most of our districts have very small and limited budgets. 64% of our districts have operating budgets of $240,000 or less, and then 44% are at $100,000 or less annual budget. Our revenue, as I indicated, comes from property tax authority, user fees and charges, assessments, which would apply to irrigation districts, and then also grants that we receive from the state of Oregon or various programs, federal programs. Our big tax policy, as you can see, I'm here to talk a lot about the tax implications because that is really one of our biggest issues. We're not so concerned with the state budget and losing franchise fee authority and state shared revenues. It's really about our action goes down in the revenue committee next door with respect to property taxation. Big issues for us are enacting any property tax preemption or expanding any existing property tax exemption, including the expansion of the number of enterprise zones, which directly impacts us. Urban renewal is a big issue for our members, but there's very little that one can do about urban renewal since it is in the Oregon State Constitution. I just want to highlight it to you as another form of city and county ability to preempt our property taxing authority in addition to the Oregon State Legislature. Ballot Measure 5 compression, as Ken has pointed out, and also Measure 4750, the 3% growth, is an issue for us. And then the whole issue of unfunded mandates, which Ken, I thought, articulated well with Ballot Measure 30 having been enacted. We're always concerned about issues and bills and legislation that comes forward from this body related to increasing the cost of doing business on local government, including PERS issues and workers' compensation issues. So that's something that we're also on the lookout for. Greg is going to just give you a brief flavor of our legislative priorities for this session, which do not revolve around revenue issues. So.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me today. As you can see, we're kind of the cats and dogs of local government, wide variety, and as Cecina pointed out in the cities and counties before, property tax limitation, it really reflects the structure of what special districts does as well. I mean, it's both a blessing and a curse. The blessing side is cities have found it difficult to fund parks, libraries, fire departments. There's been an increasing trend over the last several years for formations of districts to continue funding of those services. So they're new members for us. In that sense, cities support some of those in terms of stabilizing revenues for other sources. But on the other hand, districts that do rely on property taxes have the same problem as cities of limited growth in revenues and trying to continually fund services. Special districts, you'll get a little confused during the session. We do have large member groups like Fire and Park and Rec, and they have associations too, and we'll send lobbyists on special issues. We tend to, because of our size, we kind of form an umbrella for general government issues, and we will try to deal with those issues on behalf of all our members simply because we have a few more resources. And this session we're concerned about several issues, and they'll involve public records exemptions. Last session, municipal utilities and public utility districts on customer lists got an exemption for those from public records where people couldn't have wholesale requests for people's records, addresses, phone numbers. And during the interim, we've seen some issues with water districts same kinds of requests. We'll try to, for water and sewer, seek a similar exemption. It's not a matter of providing data, but it's in the aggregate, and there's just some concern about providing people's specific address, phone numbers, names, and Social Security for whatever may come in public records relative to collection of monies and those things. We're also interested in, because there's been a lot of formation requests, taking some of the ambiguity out of that. We've seen some difficulty in some counties with that. There's some generalized language about economic impact in the formation of districts. Some county commissioners in the hearing process, after petitions have been formed, signatures collected, economic analysis done for the services and the tax rate established, have used that as a reason to make it more difficult in the sense of getting these scheduled for election, and we'd like to clarify that and try to keep issues of compression out of the discussion, because that's really not part of the formation process. The voters will have to deal with those issues specifically, in our opinion. And, you know, it's not that the data won't be disclosed, but the voters are capable of making a decision on what level of services and what funding between groups, we believe. We're also interested in, as Hasina pointed out, county service districts are kind of a unique creature. We have some of our members that are in that category, and they've would like to at some point in time, or at least are considering, going to an elected form of government rather than appointed by the county commissioners, but there's no process in statute to allow that kind of conversion to occur, again, without, as the Ken Strobeck mentioned, in the city to get a tax rate totally dissolved, totally reform, which is kind of a cumbersome process at best, just to get elected officials as compared to appointed governing body through the county. And so we've been working with the cities and counties on how that might occur, relative to the conversion to our statutes, where you're only allowed one or two specific forms of authority to deliver services. Right now, county service districts can be formed with 20 different services or more, or one or two. It's kind of a case by case as the county commissioners address it. Sun River happens to be kind of a unique case that's involved in this at this point in time, just because of the nature of how that community was formed. We're also looking on the regulation of insurance pools. The city, county, and the school boards association operate property liability insurance pools that are unregulated. They're allowed to form, come together as public entities and form into a risk-sharing pool. There's more being discussed. It's not a matter of stopping competition, but we think there's a minimum level of disclosure. It can be a large financial transaction in terms of paying insurance losses to make sure they're all viable. We're looking at some self-regulation of those, since they are unregulated, in terms of audit and actuarial standards, and as well as management contract standards, if they are going to be formed, to make sure no one fails, and if they're going to do that. The rest of us have all had learning experiences over the years. We've been running these pools for 15 or 20 years, and we just want to make sure that people who want to jump into this and maybe think they can do it on their own, you know, do it to a minimum level of standard. And we're also going to look in this whole formation process at the last remaining boundary commission in the state in Lane County. It's kind of, there were several of them formed at one time. They've all gone except this one, and with some of the special districts have found it particularly difficult to not only do a formation process, but go through a boundary commission process. It can not only be expensive and time-consuming, but brings a whole another level of standards. Particularly, we've seen issues in Springfield and the consolidation of a fire department and the formation of a park and rec district in Junction City, where it's both have had a lot of effort put into them, but have not been able to get off the ground just because of a particular additional process that only occurs in that part of the state. So we'll be looking at either modifying, or maybe that's another kind of little level of government that can go away, since the rest of the state now seems to be operating without a boundary commission. Thank you.
With that, we'd be pleased to answer any questions about our Cats and Dogs Association. He said it first, so now I'm able to.
I think it's pretty apt. I think your material gives the panel a sense of how diverse special districts are within the state, and that they are growing in size. And I would entertain any questions you folks may have. Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope for the panel this gives you a little vetting on some of the kinds of things that are going to be coming our way, some of the issues that are ongoing within governmental units, within the state. It's far more, like everything, it gets more complicated the closer you look. I welcome questions or further inquiry on any of these issues, and we'll be sure to get you any further information if you want to go through me or our committee administrator or any of these folks. That being said, I think we're through for the day, and we will adjourn.